Today we will be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18. Chapter 18 is titled as Parikshit, Cursed by a Brahmana Boy. So text 20 is as follows. Slightly difficult Sanskrit pronunciation. Please bear with me if I make any mistakes.
Etavatanam sochitena
Hitva itaran prarthayatha vibhuti.
Hitva itaran prarthayatha vibhuti.
Yasya anghrirenum jusate anabhipsho.
Yasya anghrirenum jusate anabhipso. Etavata nanu suchitena. Pune asamya anati sayanasya. Pitva itaran prarthayatah vibhuti. Yasyanghrirenum jusate anabhipso. Etavata nanu suchitena. Pune asamya anati sayanasya. Itva itaran prarthayatah vibhuti. Yasya anghrirenum jusate anabhipso.
Etavata. So far. Alam. Unnecessary. Non. If at all. Suchitena. By description. Gunai. By attributes. Ashamya. Asamya. Immeasurable. Anati sayanasya. Of one who is unexcelled. Hitva. Leaving aside. Itaran. Others. Prathayataha. Of those who ask for. Vibhuti. Favor of the goddess of fortune. Yasya. One whose. Hungry. Feet. Renum. Dust. Jusate. Serves. Anabhipso. Of one who is unwilling. Translation. It is now ascertained that he, the personality of Godhead, is unlimited, and there is none equal to him. Consequently, no one can speak of him adequately. Great demigods cannot obtain the favor of the goddess of fortune even by prayers. But this very goddess renders service unto the Lord. Although he is unwilling to have such service. It is now ascertained that He, the personality of Godhead, is unlimited and there is no one equal to Him. Consequently, no one can speak of Him adequately. Great demigods cannot obtain the favor of the goddess of fortune even by prayers, but this very goddess renders service unto the Lord, although He is unwilling to have such service. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The personality of Godhead or the Parameshwara Parabrahman, according to the Shrutis, has nothing to do. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has got nothing to do. He has no equal, nor does anyone excel Him. He has unlimited potencies and His every action is carried out systematically in His natural and perfect ways. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is full in Himself and He has nothing to accept from anyone else, including the great demigods like Brahma. Others ask for favor of the goddess of fortune. Others ask for favors of the goddess of fortune. Who is the goddess of fortune?
Lakshmi.
Others ask for the favor of the goddess of fortune, and despite such prayers, she declines to award such favors. But still, she, Goddess Lakshmi, renders service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although He has nothing to accept from her. The Personality of Godhead, in His Garbhodakshayi Vishnu feature, begets Brahma. The Personality of Godhead, in His Garbhodakshayi Vishnu feature, begets Brahma, the first created person in the material world, from His navel lotus stem and not in the womb of the Goddess of Fortune, who is eternally engaged in His service. So Lord Brahma is also coming from the navel of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, not from the womb of the Goddess of Fortune. So he does not even ask her for that service. These are some of the instances of His complete independence and perfection. That He has nothing to do does not mean that He is impersonal. Just because He's got nothing to do does not mean that He is impersonal. He is transcendentally so full of inconceivable potencies that simply by His willing, everything is done without physical or personal endeavor. I'll repeat this. He is transcendentally so full of inconceivable potencies that simply by His willing, everything is done without physical or personal endeavor. He is called, therefore, Yogeshwara, or the Lord of all mystic powers. He is called, therefore, Yogeshwara, or the Lord of all mystic powers. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manabhishta Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahim Dadati Svapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girin Yatkripa Tamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpataro Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vatadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama
Rama Rama Hare Hare.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya.
Narayanam Namaskritya.
Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam.
Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam.
Satho Jayamudhiraye.
Satho Jayamudhiraye.
Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu.
Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu.
Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya.
Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya.
Bhagavati Uttama Shloke.
Bhagavati Uttama Shloke.
Bhavatir Naishtiki. It is now ascertained that He, the personality of Godhead, is unlimited and there is no one equal to Him. Consequently, no one can speak of Him adequately. Great demigods cannot obtain the favor of the Goddess of Fortune even by prayers. But this very goddess renders service unto the Lord, although he is unwilling to have such service. So, we see that much of the Srimad Bhagavatam is actually a question and answer session. Somebody is asking a question and somebody is answering that question. So that is going on even now. We are right now in the 18th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. However, if we go back in the same canto, in the 4th chapter, the 9th verse, the sages of Naimisaranya, they are being addressed by Srila Suta Goswami. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is a conversation which originally happened between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit, and in the audience Suta Goswami was present. Now this conversation is happening between Suta Goswami, who, having learnt from Sukadeva Goswami, is now addressing the sages at Naimisaranya, who have assembled to hear the same Srimad Bhagavatam from him. So in the 4th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 9th verse, the sages of Naimisaranya had asked a question. Actually, they had asked two questions of Suta Goswami. The first question was, they said that we have heard that Maharaj Parikshit is a first class devotee of the Lord. We have heard that his birth, his activities are all wonderful by nature. Can you please tell us more about this personality? Now, much of what Suta Goswami is speaking is an answer to that particular question. Now, that answer which they asked about Maharaj Parikshit's birth and his other activities which he initially performed, much of that has already been answered by Sukadeva Goswami up until chapter 18. However, in the next verse, which is the 10th verse of the 4th chapter, they had asked another question. That question was, please also tell us, why did this Maharaj Parikshit, why did he renounce the kingdom and fast unto death sitting beside the Ganges? Why did he do that? So, the answer to that question forms much of what the 18th chapter is all about. So, Sukadeva Goswami is explaining why Maharaj Parikshit went for a fast unto death, sitting besides the bank of the Ganges River. Chapter 18 elaborately describes how Maharaj Parikshit met Suta Goswami and prepared for his departure from this material world. So that is the context of this chapter. And that is why it's titled as Parikshit Maharaj cursed by a Brahmana boy. Now it's a very interesting section, and there are so many lessons from this particular section of Srimad Bhagavatam, right from verse 1 to where we are now. In one sense, if we see this verse in isolation, it may not make as much sense as if we meditate on this verse in the context of what, in the context of the flow that is happening from verse 1 up until verse 19. So today we'll discuss that flow and how it naturally relates to whatever the verse that is depicted today for all of us. So from verse 1 to 10, what is happening in this chapter? From verse 1 to 10, Suta Goswami is essentially glorifying Maharaj Parikshit to the sages of Naimisaranya. The theme of verse 1 to 10 is essentially, there are two themes which are running. The first is how to develop fearlessness in life. How to develop fearlessness, number one. The second theme is how to surrender to the Lord. Because many people say, I have surrendered to the Lord. Sometimes in programs also, when we have, you know, people coming, you know, some people are coming, you know, for the first time to the program. But when we ask them, they say, we are already surrendered to the Lord. Like that. Are you chanting? No, I don't have time to chant. Like that. Are you associating regularly with devotees? No, I don't have time. I have familiar responsibilities. But I have surrendered to the Lord. So it's a very sentimental statement that people make about surrender. But surrender is a systematic process. So the theme of this particular section is fearlessness and surrender. And Maharaj Parikshit is a very classic example of how one must surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in the verses from 1 to 10, Suta Goswami is elaborating to the sages of Naimisaranya how Lord Krishna saved Maharaj Parikshit right from the time that he was in the womb of his mother, when Ashwatthama had released the Brahmastra which was aimed at the womb of Uttara in order to destroy her, the progeny. At that time, Lord himself had entered the womb and protected Maharaj Parikshit. So Maharaj Parikshit is that personality who has seen the Lord personally while he was in the womb of the mother. Much of mankind does not have that kind of fortune. Most of mankind do not even take darshan of the Lord, you know, at the time of death. But Maharaj Parikshit saw in the womb itself. So how fortunate he is. Now, because Maharaj Parikshit saw Lord Krishna in the womb of his mother, he had the desire to see the same Supreme Personality of Godhead again and again in this lifetime. That's why his name is Parikshit. Now, this theme talks about how Maharaj Parikshit surrendered to Lord Krishna fearlessly. Now, because Maharaj Parikshit had this experience within the womb of the Bhakta Vatsala feature of the Lord, which is the protective feature of the Lord, he was completely convinced that the Lord will protect me in any circumstances. I don't have to do anything for my protection. So therefore, even when he was cursed to die within 7 days from a Takshak snake bite, then his response was not out of fear of death. His response was one where he had complete conviction that if the Lord wants to protect me, no Takshak bird can kill me, and if the Lord wants to kill me, none of my weapons or my money or my arsenal or my power can protect me. So he was completely convinced in his mind. Therefore, instead of worrying about imminent death that was facing him, all that he was concerned about was, how can I constantly remember the Lord? Up until the last breath that I have. Because the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita that whatever state of mind one attains, one has, whatever consciousness that one has at the time of leaving one's body, one will attain that destination without fail. Therefore, Maharaj Parikshit knew the importance of smaranam. Not smaranam sometimes, constant smaranam, nitya smaranam of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, the first key lesson that we learn from verses 1 to 10 is, for one with faith, for one with faith, whose life is surrendered to the plan of the Lord, for such a person, there is no fear. So that is the secret of fearlessness. Secret of fearlessness is alignment with the plan of the Lord in our lives. Why? Why is a devotee fearless, knowing this? Because it is only a devotee who understands that whatever setbacks that we have in our life are merely a plan of the Lord for the devotee to cultivate detachment from that particular object. Only a devotee will understand this. Many times in corporate life, typically, most of us are anxious about when will we be recognized in office, when we will get promotion, when we will get power, how can I have influence on more number of people, how can I control people's lives, how can I be the go-to man at workplace, such that everything comes to my desk, you know, like that. And sometimes when plans don't go in that manner, then it's natural to feel agitated in the whole process. However, a devotee verily understands that whatever happens in his or her life is simply a plan of Krishna to detach you from such material attachments. The need for power, prestige, position is a material desire. It has got nothing spiritual in it. So the Lord slowly knows how to detach you from that position. So sometimes frustration is the first step towards success in spiritual life. Frustration in material activities is the first step in spiritual life. So a devotee understands that these setbacks are nothing but the plan of the Lord in my life. And whatever outcome happens out of this whole thing is going to be always auspicious. Mangalam. Everything is going to be auspicious for a devotee. Whatever outcome happens. Whereas for a non-devotee is always scared about these things, about the outcome of his activities. A non-devotee is very attached to the results of his activities. A person who has not surrendered to Krishna, who does not understand the science of bhakti, who does not understand how material nature works, such a person is always under anxiety. Because such a person, for such a person, whatever results of activities that such a person gets or does not get is directly dependent upon such person's karmic bank balance. Whereas for a devotee, there is no karma. Whatever is given to a devotee or whatever is not given to a devotee is directly the plan of the Lord. But whereas for a person who is not in Krishna consciousness, who is not in bhakti, for such a person whatever he gets or does not get is because of his past karma. So that is one reason. The second thing that Maharaj Parikshit knew very well, because of which he cultivated the detachment, was that as a devotee, he knows that the Lord is involved directly in his life and not indirectly. For example, if my son takes he's not yet 18, but if he has a bottle of alcohol in his hand, the cops will handle him in a different way. As a father, I'll handle him in a different way. Right? So the treatment is different. So in one case, the treatment comes from justice, from that vantage point. In the other case, the treatment comes from love, compassion and mercy. The cop may counsel very nicely, but the father will give one slap. Father will not hesitate, father will not counsel in such a case. The immediate reaction is, how can you do this? Does it mean that the cop loves him more than the father? Because the father gave a slap. The cop told, try not to do it again. It's okay. When you're 18, you can do it over. No problem. Legally, you're allowed. But the father will not counsel the son that way. Legally, after 18, you can do it. No problem. No. Even after 18, even after 25, even today, at whatever age that I am in, even today, if my father will see me, he'll give me one slap. He will not hesitate. He will not say, oh, this guy is so, no. He's now old enough, so let me be his friend and whatever. One slap, finished. So this is how the Lord deals with his devotee. One slap. I told you twice, get detached from this, but you're not. So therefore, I'll do that job, don't worry. I'll slap you in such a way, you will not desire that thing again. So, in the court of the Lord, there is love and mercy. Outside, justice could work. The third reason for fearlessness is that most people who are not aware of the science of the body and the soul or of Krishna consciousness, they believe that death is the end of existence. So therefore, their philosophy is, after all, life is short, do whatever you want, enjoy the senses. And then live a complete life, whatever that means. Okay. So this is the thinking of a non-devotee. So death is the end of existence. Whereas a devotee knows that death is not the end of existence, but it is the beginning of eternal existence. It is the beginning of liberation. So a devotee understands that. Therefore he is fearless. Now these are various reasons for fearlessness, and which Maharaj Parikshit understood. But there is a much higher lesson than all this around this pastime of Maharaj Parikshit. More important than all this is the fact that the Lord sometimes uses his intimate devotee and puts him in such a dangerous situation to teach all of us a lesson or two on how not to handle things and how to handle things. Both the Lord teaches. The Lord teaches through his devotee, through his most intimate devotee, how perfectly not to do something. And the Lord also teaches through his intimate devotee how perfectly to do something. The art of perfectly not doing something is also an art. That also has to be perfect. Am I making sense? Perfectly how it should not be done. So there is an interesting example. Now it's a strange coincidence that today we are discussing about Maharaj Parikshit, who is demonstrating how perfectly to do it. And in our Bhakti Vedanta course, we are studying the 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Hiranyakashipu, through the Lord. Now Hiranyakashipu is a very intimate associate of the Lord. He is none other than Jai Vijay, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. So the Lord chose these two people to come down as the demon of all demons. No demon can be as demonic as Hiranyakashipu. So the Lord uses his devotee to show both the extremes. On one extreme is Hiranyakashipu, who tells us perfectly how not to be. And on the other hand, Maharaj Parikshit perfectly tells us how to be. So through Hiranyakashipu, the Lord taught us how not to be duplicitous. Speak something, do something else. Preach something, but actually do something else. Hiranyakashipu showed perfectly this quality of duplicity. It was interesting that Hiranyakashipu's brother, Hiranyaksha, has been killed by Lord Varaha in the Varaha incarnation. Now Hiranyakashipu is extremely angry at the Lord. Extremely angry. He wants to kill the Lord. Now this is his mood. But what is happening is, when his family members are lamenting over Hiranyaksha's death, Hiranyakashipu is speaking Bhagavad Gita to them. He is telling them, why are you lamenting? After all, he was not the body, he was the soul. The soul will always, the soul will never perish. Nobody can go against the will of providence. He is speaking all these big things. But, and then what happens is, because he speaks all these things, all his relatives are pacified. Who is the only person who is not pacified? The speaker. This is called as duplicity. This is the height of duplicitousness. Everyone is convinced except you. It's not uncommon in the material world. It's very common in the sales field. Most of these marketing and sales people, they know that the product is bogus. They are the most convinced that the product is bogus. But they will go and convince everyone else to believe that this is the best product that you can ever buy. And you should have this product. But they may not buy that product. Like that. So sometimes you may work for one jewelry brand, but you will secretly, or you may work for, it happened that way. When I was in my B school, second year, we had companies coming to our campus to recruit people, So, Coke had come to our campus, So we have to always be sensitive. Who to slot first? Coke is always sensitive. Pepsi should not come first. You should call us first to your campus, like that. So Coke was sitting in the campus room, and one of the girls, one of my batchmates, she was a fan of Pepsi. And in our canteen also we had Pepsi being served. So she took Pepsi and went inside. And then last moment we stopped her. Excuse me, what are you doing? You can't take a Pepsi drink, and then get into a, Coke forum. They'll simply stop coming to campus. Next year onward, they'll never come for recruitment. So finally we gave them some nice hot tea from our canteen, So this is something. These companies are extremely passionate about their products. Now, whether it is good for our health, whether it is not good, they themselves may consume Pepsi at home. But when they come in front of you, they will always advertise their products to you. So it is like that. So Hiranyakashipu, is showing this duplicity, speaking something but himself not, practicing it in his own life. Himself not being consumer of Krishna consciousness. Like that. Hiranyakashipu is also showing us how not to perform austerities. In fact, Hiranyakashipu did the highest austerity. It is said that the austerity which Hiranyakashipu performed gave him so much of powers that even Bhrigu Muni could not perform that austerity. For hundreds of years, sitting in one same position, and his body was a skeleton, literally. His life air he was maintaining in the bones of his body. When Brahma came in front of him and said, what are you doing? The heat which was coming out from this body was burning the universe. And Lord Brahma came and told him, excuse me, what do you want? Why are you doing this kind of austerity? And then he takes his kamandal and then he throws the water and whole Hiranyakashipu's body is rejuvenated. And then Hiranyakashipu asks that, I want to become immortal. I should not die. And Lord Brahma says, I cannot give you that benediction because I myself am going to die. Where can I give you immortality? But then he asks that I should not be killed outside nor inside, neither in the air nor the earth, and neither during day nor during night, and we know that past time. So he literally tries to circumvent death through intelligent logic, and that took benediction directly from Brahma. So Srila Prabhupada writes interesting purports there. He says that Hiranyakashipu's austerity was very, was very austere. However, the mood of his austerity was completely demonic. You can do all these austerities, but the mood is what is important in an austerity. His mood was to become Brahma. So he's taking an austerity, he's doing austerities, he's praying to Brahma. In fact, Hiranyakashipu is glorifying Brahma. Srila Prabhupada says, those prayers which are reserved for glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hiranyakashipu is praying to Lord Brahma. He is saying, Lord Brahma, you are the Supreme. Why? Inside his mind, he wants to become that. He wants to take that post. So you are glorifying someone to take that position. And we see this in corporate life also. Same thing we see every day. You glorify the boss all the time. At the end of the day, what do you want? You want that chair. Like that. Therefore you are glorifying him. So this is Hiranyakashipu mentality. So this is not the mood of performing any austerity. Hiranyakashipu also is the best example of how not to rule a kingdom. It is said that after Lord Brahma blessed him, he became so powerful that he created havoc in the heavenly kingdom. In all the 14 planetary systems he created havoc and terror. It was said that the demigods had to take his slippers and keep it on their head and walk. So much of misuse of his power. How not to rule? He completely destroyed Brahminical culture in society. He ensured that no yagyas are performed, nothing is offered to the Supreme Personality of Lord Godhead. Not even that, but he had no respect for the Brahmanas and the cows. Prabhupada gives a very elaborate purport of Asuric culture which he brought. And then Prabhupada talks about Aryan civilization. How a civilization should be and how it should not be in those sections of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is a perfect example of how not to rule a kingdom. And then, if you contrast that with Maharaj Parikshit's mood here, he is giving a perfect example of how to rule the kingdom. So, on one hand, through his bhakti, he has already proved the aspect of fearlessness and surrender. But he is also proving his Vaishnava leadership qualities in these sections. He is doing exactly the opposite of what Hiranyakashipu did. The moment he saw bull and cow in danger, bull was the personification of religion and cow was Mother Earth. So the moment he saw both of them in danger, he took the onus on himself to protect them and ensure that though Kali is there, by the will of the Lord, Kali will be there anyway. He can't go against the will of the Lord. But he ensured that the influence of Kali is mitigated. He gave a solution for that. He gave Kali a place to reside. So by which people have a choice, if they indulge in those activities of meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling and hoarding gold, then Kali will reside there. And he also gave an option for those people who are not involved in these activities, the influence of Kali will not be there. So he gave Kali its rightful place in Kali Yuga. Like that. So he was the ideal executive head of government in that sense. Now, Lord Krishna was so pleased with Maharaj Parikshit that he used Maharaj Parikshit to exemplify so many qualities. All these qualities Maharaj Parikshit was exemplifying. So we see that the ability to accept fate, that's a unique ability. Even sometimes as practicing devotees, when we are faced with major reversals in our life, for example, if we undergo a major accident and we have to be, in hospital, we have just come out of a near-death experience, sometimes the devotee may say, the Lord didn't protect me. I felt that He should have protected me more. Why me? Because after all, I was chanting nicely. I didn't harm anyone. So why me? Like that. But here we see Maharaj not asking why me. Maharaj Parikshit is showing the ability to accept fate even if it means that fate wants you to die untimely. He accepted that fate. Why? Because if that wouldn't have been there, the Srimad Bhagavatam wouldn't have been spoken. So it was the Lord's will that Srimad Bhagavatam be established. Because Krishna Swadhama Upagate Dharma Jnana Adivi Saha Kalav Nashtra Drishamesha Purana Arka Adhuna Uditaha. After the departure of Lord Krishna, where will religion take shelter? It has taken shelter in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the book incarnation of Krishna. So it had to be established. So for that, someone had to give his life. And therefore Maharaj Parikshit surrendered to that will of the Lord. So that is where, in the first 10 sections, he is glorified as the epitome of fearlessness and surrender. So his question was not that how I should avoid death. Nowadays people are engaged in how to avoid death, how to avoid old age by using cosmetics, hair dye, blah, 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 blah. Like that. In fact, Walt Disney has wanted his followers to preserve his body so that in case there is something called as reincarnation, he can come back to his body and enjoy his as again as Walt Disney. It was like that. However, Maharaj Parikshit did not make any such plans. How to avoid death. Instead, his only question, knowing that he is going to die, was, how should I fill the remaining days of my life to mold my consciousness? Because he knew that that consciousness of Lord Krishna will decide his next destination. If we leave our body in the smaranam of Lord Krishna, then the spiritual world becomes our rightful claim. We also see how Maharaj Parikshit gave up his position at his peak. In India, most of the politicians don't do that. Everyone, it's called Kissa Kursi Ka. Everyone wants to hold on to his chair, power and position. There has to be some scam and the cops have to physically come and put them inside jail. Only then they will leave. Like that. But Sukadeva Goswami was at his peak. All his subjects used to respect him. At that peak, he did not hesitate to give up that position just to surrender to the will of the Lord. He left his kingdom and surrendered to Sukadeva Goswami. Like that. Srila Prabhupada says that he was thus able to understand Lord Krishna. Because of this surrender, because of that renunciation of that kingdom, because he was willing to give up something material for a higher cause, then he was able to understand Lord Krishna. As long as we are holding on to that, then we will not be able to understand Lord Krishna. So that renunciation has to come. That detachment has to come. So Prabhupada writes that he was thus able to understand Lord Krishna, who is otherwise unlimited, unconquerable, and as today's verse says, who is otherwise unknowable. Lord cannot be known. Like that. His Grace Bhurijan Prabhu writes a very interesting comment in his treatise, Unveiling the Lotus Feet, which is his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, attaining fearlessness, I'll repeat, it's a very nice statement, attaining fearlessness, especially at death, attaining fearlessness, especially at death, is the challenge of one's existence. When the mind is typically grasping for shelter, at the time of death, the mind is grasping for shelter somewhere. When at that time we want respite from the pain that our body is giving us, at that time Maharaj Parikshit was able to fix his mind firmly on the Lord with great devotion. And that is the success of our entire sadhana, which we have performed throughout our lives. So, the first 10 sections talk about this. Verses 11 to 16 also give very profound messages in this section. In verses 11 to 16, the sages of Naimisaranya are now replying to Suta Goswami. Earlier, Suta Goswami was talking to them, now the sages are replying to him. The key lesson that we learn from 11 to 16 is that hearing Srimad Bhagavatam or the transcendental pastimes of the Lord is the most auspicious activity in the entire universe. Most auspicious activity. Sarva Loka Mangalam. Like that. So, the sages of Naimisaranya, they are exemplifying the quality of a hearer. What is the quality of a hearer? If a hearer hears with rapt attention and asks questions of the speaker with a genuine desire to know, not to show off that, how, what kind of an intelligent question I have asked in an assembly, just to get some 2 minute of pride. Okay. If the hearer hears in a humble mood and asks a genuine question of the speaker and milks the speaker, just like we milk a cow, milks the speaker and gets the best out of the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, then that hearer is very glorious. Like that. And that Srimad Bhagavatam session is a success. So the sages are exemplifying this by milking Sukadeva Goswami, going on asking more and more, tell us more, tell us more, tell us more. They are glorifying Sukadeva Goswami. That is another quality. The hearer glorifies the speaker. They are glorifying Sukadeva Goswami, offering him benedictions and blessings. Urging Sukadeva Goswami to dive deeper and deeper into the nectar of Krishna consciousness and the Lord's pastimes. Because the Lord's pastimes are ananta. unending. Again, as today's verse says, there is no end to his pastimes. The Lord's pastimes are never enough for a sincere hearer. And from the speaker's point of view, it is also true that no speaker can speak of the Lord adequately. No hearer is tired, and the speaker himself can go on speaking on and on. So the Lord is ananta, unlimited, which is what our verse today says. So Srila Prabhupada writes an interesting purport to text 11. He says, the more we hear, the more we can know about his transcendental nature. So Krishna cannot be understood. Srila Prabhupada often says, Lord cannot be understood by sending space shuttles, Sputniks, into few hundred kilometers above the earth. The astronauts went there and then someone interviewed them. Of course, whether they went there or not is a different question. Whether they went at all to the moon is a big question. But, they went there and then they were asked, did you see God over there? They said, yeah, we looked here and there, we couldn't find him. Like that. That's not the way of finding God. The Lord will be found only through Shravan. Shravanadi Chitta Shuddhi Karilavudar. By hearing, when our consciousness is purified, Chitta Shuddhi happens, then the Lord inside will reveal himself to us. So it is his prerogative to reveal himself to us. It is not an algorithm which you can put 1 + 2, therefore Lord will appear. No, it doesn't work like that. Shravanadi. So the more we hear, the more we can know about his transcendental nature and make definite progress back to Godhead. So this section talks quite heavy on the importance of regularly hearing, not one time hearing, not on special holidays. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. The sages were actually, what they were doing, the Naimisharanya sages, initially why were they assembled there? Not to hear from Sutta Goswami. Initially they were assembled there because they were performing a yajna where smoke was coming out. Black soot was coming out. Nothing else was coming out. So, the sages were performing this smoke producing yajna, Prabhupada writes, at Naimisharanya. But they were not going anywhere. But as soon as they started hearing from Sutta Goswami, from that point in time, they started experiencing Krishna. Up until that point in time, they were not experiencing Krishna. So there is externally so many things are going on, but auspiciousness was not there. Auspiciousness means Krishna Katha. Nothing else in this world is auspicious. Shrama Evai Kevalam. Everything else which does not generate Rati for the Lord, Shrama Evai Kevalam. Na Utpadiye Dedi Rati, Shrama Evai Kevalam. And Srila Prabhupada says that they started experiencing Lord Krishna so much that they started praising the incomparable effect of even a moment's association with a Uttam Adhikari Sadhu. Like that. And in verse 13, they express their readiness to continuously hear from Sutta Goswami. So that is another learning which we have. Verses 17 to 19 elaborates more on the power of hearing, the power of associating with saintly personalities. So the key lesson number 3 there is that a preacher's qualification is not by his birth. A devotee's qualification is not by his birth. A speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam's qualification is not by his birth, but by his purity and the amount of realization that he has. Now, the pastime is very nice here. While addressing the sages at Naimisharanya, Sutta Goswami suddenly starts speaking about his own low birth. Now, Sutta Goswami was not born in a very high Brahminical family. He was born in a lower family. So, by birth wise, it was not a very high birth. Now, despite that, we see that the sages who were born in much higher lineages, the sages were born in high Brahminical hierarchies, in lineages. They are listening from Sutta Goswami, giving him the position of respect. So Sutta Goswami says that to be awarded this purification is awarded to us by virtue of our sadhana, to be able to speak Srimad Bhagavatam. So Sutta Goswami says that to be awarded this purification, one must serve and follow the instruction of great devotees. What is the instruction of great devotees? Chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. If we are lazy to chant and we say, no, 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 I am following bhakti process, I don't have time, you know, then we are not going to get that mercy of the senior devotees, of the disciplic succession. So chanting is the essence of bhakti. So therefore, we have to follow in the instructions of senior acharyas means to take the bead bag and chant regularly. That will bring in the required purity then to preach or to counsel. Without that purity, our preaching and counseling will have no effect. It will have some effect because it may probably bring someone from the mode of ignorance to the mode of goodness. But the mode of goodness also will bind us to the material world. It will not release us from the samsara sagara, from the cycle of birth, disease, old age and death. Therefore, when someone becomes a devotee and follows Srimad Bhagavatam, starts chanting the holy names of the Lord, such a person becomes qualified to preach and becomes powerful in counseling. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada minimizes the importance of one's birth and emphasizes the importance of attaining this purity. And Srila Prabhupada also emphasizes that it is the duty of you Indians to go out and preach this message to the entire world. Bharata Bhumite Haila Manushya Janma Yara Janma Sartaka Kari Karapara Upakara. Which was Lord Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction. Whoever is born in Bharata Bhumi, first you perfect yourself. Then after that you go to the Paschatya Desh, go to the Western countries and then preach. Of course, India is also a Western country nowadays. It is not different. Okay. We are progressing. We are an advanced nation now. We were supposed to be a backward nation before. Okay. So Sutta Goswami also says that he learned this science of Krishna from great rishis and authorities like Sukadeva Goswami and Vyasadeva. And thus he became qualified. His qualification also was because he was under some acharya. And now he is associating with the sages. So His Grace Gurujan Prabhu writes, now he has the double advantage of hearing also from sages and preaching also to sages. So he's got double association. So simply reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada writes, simply reciting Srimad Bhagavatam removes the fault of low birth. If any of us have a fault of low birth, simply hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and speaking Srimad Bhagavatam will remove that fault. Why? Because the Lord is pavitra. The Lord is pure. The Lord cannot be contaminated by our low birth. Right? Whereas we can only be purified by speaking about the Lord. The Lord is Shuddham and Apapaviddham. Shuddham means that He is pure. And Apapaviddham means that in the process of purifying us, He will not get contaminated. For example, if I have an infection, I take a piece of cotton, I dip it in Dettol, and then I wipe that infection. My infection is getting cured, but the cotton is now impure. If I take the cotton and try to touch someone else, they say, oh, don't touch me, I'll get that infection. But the Lord is not like that. In removing our infection, He doesn't get that infection. Because that is why he's called as apapaviddham, means prophylactic. That's why in every yajna we say om pavitra, what is om apavitra pavitrova sarvavastam gatopiva yatsmare pundari raksham abhyantara suchi. Yeah, we say that. So we purify. So when we purify, then we become pure. Because the Lord is pavitra. He can only purify. So this is the theme of verse 17 to 19. And now, in verse 20, the Lord's characteristics are further glorified. Having defined that He is pure, now this verse is coming up. So Srila Prabhupada describes in this purport that the Lord is not only pure, but He is completely independent. He is Swarat. He is full in Himself. He does not want anything from anyone. In fact, and the Lord, He's so attractive that even the goddess of fortune want to serve Him. Everyone in this material world wants to serve the goddess of fortune. Hey Lakshmi Ma, please, dhanam dehi, putram dehi. No, that is what they pray, typically. Even sometimes we go to our relatives, they'll bless us also like that. You must earn more and more. Melum menu sambadhi. You must earn more and more. You must get promotion in office. No, everyone somehow only blesses like this. No one blesses, may you never be born again. May you get detached from material life, because this material life is the cause of your misery. It's only a Vaishnava who can bless us like that. So,
The Lord is so attractive that even the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, behind whom whole world is running, she is running behind him. And she wants to massage his lotus feet. She wants entry into that Rasalila and she is not getting entrance. Why? Because to enter the Rasalila, one must be completely surrendered to the Lord. Trinadapi Sunichena Tararivas Aishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtanya Sadi Sadahari. There should be no tinge of any position. Srila Prabhupada sometimes says that the goddess of fortune is not able to enter the Rasalila because she knows that she is the goddess of fortune. Whereas the gopis, they don't have any position. They are willing to be misunderstood by the material world and be not respected. And they are running behind Krishna. They are leaving their husbands and going behind Krishna. Usually that is not very well respected in the materialistic society. But they don't even want that. They are not even worried about their name. So that mood will get entrance into Rasalila, which that goddess Lakshmi is also not having. Now the wealth, still, we have to understand that who is goddess Lakshmi? She is also a pure devotee of the Lord. Except that she worships the Lord in Aishwarya Bhav. So goddess, attaining Lord, goddess Lakshmi's lotus feet itself is the goal of Vaishnavism. But what is attaining goddess Lakshmi's lotus feet? Not getting material wealth. Attaining goddess Lakshmi's lotus feet, what is that dhan? That dhan is the love that she has for Mahavishnu. Srila Prabhupada says, in the Goloka realm, Srila Prabhupada sometimes says, Golokera Premadhan Harinam Sankirtan. So the Golokera Premadhan, the dhan, the real wealth of a devotee is the Goloka Prem. Like that Vaikuntha Prem, which is the equivalent of Goloka Prem in Vaikuntha, that goddess of fortune has. But nobody asks her for Vishnu Bhakti. Nobody goes to a Lakshmi temple and asks Lakshmi that I have come here so that I may get the same service of massaging the Lord's lotus feet that you have. Everyone goes there only for Lakshmi Puja, whatever that is called, whatever puja that is. So the Lord does not even, what to speak of wealth, the Lord does not even need a feminine consort for creation. All of us who have become fathers, we needed a feminine consort for producing children. But the Lord does not need that also. The Lord produced Brahma from his own navel, a stem is coming and Brahma is appearing from there. So he doesn't have to go through the process which human beings have to go through for reproduction. Simply by his willing, everything is done without physical or personal endeavor. He is therefore called Yogeshwara or the Lord of all mystic powers. Simply by his willing. The Lord simply willed that he wants to fight with someone. One day, the Lord simply willed that I want to fight with someone now. And immediately what happened? Two devotees understood the Lord's mood. Jaya and Vijay. They said, okay, the Lord wants to fight. Now, if the Lord wants to fight with someone, then the Lord, and for it to be a fairly, you know, intense combat, somebody has to be really as powerful as the Lord. Now, who will the Lord give the power of attorney, that kind of power, to the person who he trusts the most, right? So he gave that power to Hiranyakashipu so that he can really give a tough fight, you know, to his own self. So by his own desire, then the whole pastime of Hiranyakashipu coming down to the earth, being cursed by, you know, the four Kumaras. Actually in Goloka Vrindavan, in the spiritual world, there is a question of curse. Material curses don't work in the spiritual world. So it is a neophyte understanding that Jaya and Vijay fell down because of the curse of the four Kumaras. Actually, they fell down because of the desire of the Lord, because he simply desired to fight like that. And therefore, they wanted to, they being pure devotees, they understood the mood and then they came down. And they were truly demonic because they really wanted to anger the Lord so that the Lord can experience the Raudra Ras to the full. So that is the pastime. So here it is mentioned that the Lord simply by his willing, everything is done without physical or personal endeavor like that. So that is the gist of today's class. So if we understand the flow from verse 1 to 19, then it is, you know, easier to appreciate what verse 20 is talking about. So I'll stop here and ask if there are any questions, comments, corrections. Yes, ma'am.
Sometimes I feel a bit suspicious because I'm trying to show that Bhakti is wonderful, but I'm also struggling getting purified. So I feel like I have to put on a show that everything is good.
Good question. So, everyone heard that question? Mataji is asking that we are talking about duplicity. Sometimes when we preach, we have to extol the glories of devotional service, bhakti, whereas we ourselves may not be able to relish the glory of bhakti much. Is that correct? Somewhere around your question, right? So Srila Prabhupada has answered this very nicely. Srila Prabhupada says that our preaching is not imperfect if we simply repeat what the acharyas are saying. If we simply repeat what the disciplic succession is saying, then we may not be perfect, but whatever we say will still be perfect. And then, because we are repeating what the disciplic succession is saying, it will lead to us becoming perfect. In fact, that is what this verse is also. Today we discussed, right? By preaching, one can become perfect. That is why it is said that for a person to graduate from Kanishta Adhikari to Madhyama platform, the only way is what? Preaching. One cannot graduate from Kanishta to Madhyama platform if one does not take to the activity of preaching. Does it answer your question?
We're saying what the Acharya said, but we don't have the realization.
Okay. So, there are two things. One is that we should not speak beyond our realization, which is correct. Srila Prabhupada says that, for example, we don't speak about Rasa Leela too much, no? Or the intimate pastimes of that Lord had with the gopis, no? In Vrindavan, because we, at least for myself, I am not pure enough to even understand what is going on there. So, what to, you know, speak about those. But within the realms of Vaidhi Bhakti, whatever instructions the acharyas are saying, if we refrain, you know, from sharing that information with the outside world, then how will anyone become a devotee? If I wait till the time that I am, for example, we always say that I am not the body, I am the spirit soul. But when we get an injury and we are lying in hospital under pain, then if someone comes and tells us, Prabhuji, you told in the class you are not the body or the soul, take this fellow out of the room. He is irritating me right now. He doesn't understand my jaw is paining. Or when your tooth is being plucked, you know, it's being plucked out by the dentist, is working like this. And then you are thinking, I am not the body, I am the soul. Not possible, right? That is because of our inferior position. That is because of our attachment to our body. But doesn't mean that the philosophy is wrong. So yes, you know, from a point of view of service to Srila Prabhupada, if we do our preaching as a service, then that is okay. Because Prabhupada again writes, if we wait to be perfect to preach, then we may not become perfect in this lifetime. And also, preaching itself is the process of purification, of us becoming perfect. So it's the chicken or the egg first. So there is a balance which we will have to strike. If we say that, no, I'll only do my sadhana one day when I become perfect, then I'll preach, then you will never preach, because when you progress more and more in bhakti, what is your realization? That we are more and more imperfect, right? The moment we act, even if we start thinking, oh, now I am perfect to preach, that means we are imperfect actually. So it doesn't work like that. So you'll go into a recursive logical loop where it will never end like that. So better preach in a mood saying that I am not qualified to speak all these things, but I am nimitta matra. I am just your instrument, my dear Srila Prabhupada. I'll just sit here and you vibrate your message through my tongue. That's all. Finished. And incidentally also put something in my own head of what I spoke, so that then I can improve like that. So as long as we retain that mood, then we have no problem.
I would even personal realization. When you were telling about this story, that if your son is with a bottle of wine, what will you do? So I was only 5 years old, and my father used to play chess. He was a very good chess player. So one day I went, and he was a smoking beauty, you know, like cigarette. So I asked, why are you smoking this? So I just snapped on his hand and started. What a thing. So he blessed me. He was never smoking again.
I was.
So this is what love between parent and Lord and the policeman. that he, if the parents give you something, they always bless you and give you the best thing. And which even they can't control, but they will give you mercy. So this is Lord's mercy. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. Anyone? One last question we'll take. Anything else? ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की शिल प्रभुपाद की जय निताय गौरव प्रमाण।